Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. We're an hour from a rim session talking Mavs basketball with you tonight as they get set to host the Cavaliers. We have NFL news today here coming up in just a second, and Nick Harris is going to answer our Cowboys questions coming up at 3:20. Right smack dab in the middle of that break, it sounded like a motorcycle was flying down 75, but then upon further review, I think it was a jet that went overhead.
It was.
And it was
a jet.
It was freaking cooking. Did you hear that over there?
What it might have been? Right down the street, we got North Texas, Texas State.
That's right.
At Ford Station.
It was a flyover.
So there it was the flyover, right?
Good point.
Okay. Green about to spank the Bobcats here.
It sounded like it was to our left, but it probably was to our right.
Who knows, man?
That makes sense.
That thing was humming, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe that's what that was, but I put it out on X. Did anybody else hear that? I mean, we could get some more details on it.
Wooly's right. We got football getting ready to start here with
Green. Baby, car.
All right, speaking of Wooly Bully, here he is with your NFL news today. Take it away, Wolchuk.
Okie dokie, it looks like Nick Sirianni, job not safe. Reports are from Jeremy Fowler and company that depending on what goes on in the playoffs, Nick Sirianni's head coaching job could be in jeopardy. If they were to lose in the first round, bye-bye Nick Sirianni.
Bye-bye.
Buying this?
Ball sack.
You think it's ball sacking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, like we were talking, like Eric always every time we have Merrill Reese on asks the Nick Sirianni, but he's going to give you the Nick's safe thing.
Yes, because that's the rational thing to do, but in no way is anything that happens in Philadelphia when it comes to knee-jerk stuff going to be rational. I think it's very much so on the table. If they S the bed,
I think you're right.
There's definitely a world where Sirianni gets bleep canned.
I like what you're saying there.
What, out wild card round, bleep canned?
Yeah, like Sirianni? First round exit.
Well, that'd be a 2-7 loss right there.
Which, hey, it happened to the Cowboys last year, and the 7 seed's going to be good in the NFC. I mean, it could be Washington.
Or it could be the Packers.
Green Bay.
Here's my thought. Again, I would have fired him last year considering how bad it went, and then with a month to go in the season, everything happening with the quarterback and A.J. Brown, I thought, wow, but you know they got to like something about him, and the results kind of speak for themselves. With as much turnover as they've had, they had the pass rush and the offensive line with Kelce, totally remade their defense, found a way to get it done offensively. I would just look at that as a one-game, you know, misfortune. But everything that's gone on with Sirianni, on the outside, is obnoxious. I couldn't imagine working with him or trusting him to lead other men. And I think a lot of the toxic stuff that surfaces is a result of his lack of wisdom and guidance.
Yeah, and he's getting in fights on the sideline, you know, with players, to your point. I mean, there is a lot of dysfunction. And a great text from the 469, like, they did get rid of Doug Peterson after they won a Super Bowl pretty quick after.
That's a pretty good job, 469.
And that is one thing that I do, and I hate the Eagles, but the way that they're, like, they're not going to settle. If they, like, they did it at quarterback with Carson Wentz, they moved right on, and then at head coach Doug Peterson, they're like, this isn't working, let's get a new guy. For Sirianni,
they moved on coordinators after a year, right?
Like, Nick Sirianni, if you're one and done here, I know you've done a lot of winning, but if it's not good enough, we're moving on. Where the Cowboys are going to kind of live in this limbo for 5 to 10 years, and, you know, hey, continuity, guys. Yeah. Let's just keep this thing familiar and comfortable, and eventually keep hanging around that rim. Boom, ball's going to fall on in. Well, it hasn't been falling in for 3 damn decades now, guys. Come on, make some changes.
It's flawed. I opened up the windows. Hopefully Carter Freeman doesn't mind it too much with the sun coming in. I heard something else out there. You know, I saw in the text people heard a jet down in Lancaster about 5 minutes ago, and
I think Wooly's on to something with this game kicking
off. We're far away from the national anthem right now, aren't we?
No, but it happened like when you probably heard.
Oh, okay.
So I think
we got the national anthem.
Yeah,
going
our buddy Richie from Ennis is he works off Greenville and Walnut Hill, fourth floor of the hospital with a window view, and it was 4 fighter jets.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah. Wish we could have seen it.
Okay, we just got the official injury report. Cowboys, Commanders out is...
Wish we were broadcasting this game.
North Texas Mean Green. I know. It would have been awesome. I had tickets to go to this one. I missed it.
Beautiful day out there.
We also, North Texas, we're missing all of our good dudes. Like Chandler Morris didn't play in Sheffield.
Starting a freshman dude, right?
We are, yeah. We're starting a true freshman. It's his first ever start. So we'll see how this one goes. I mean, Texas State's an up-and-coming program, so I'm hopeful we just don't get embarrassed. We're looking for our first bowl win since 2013.
And if you're making your way to the stadium and you're a little bit late getting in, keep your eyes peeled for the Martin House Brewing guys.
Oh,
they're just handing out the best beers in the Metroplex for free as you walk in.
So. For free?
I would never make it in the stadium. standing by,
just swimming just in the Dr. Bob.
You're drinking and you're kind of walking around like, oh, are these samples?
Hey, guys, that Roadhouse coffee, if you don't mind, bring some over to the station here. I'd like to get my hands on some of that Roadhouse coffee. One will do you good. I learned that
the
hard way.
What you're thinking and what you're drinking, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now I probably couldn't do that. I don't think I'd be able to drive home if I had one of those. Chumet Doga, Mazi Smith, Nick Vigil, Donovan Wilson, all questionable for your Dallas Cowboys. Micah Parsons is going to be good to go. He's looking to hit double-digit sacks against the Commanders. And look, he needs to keep that going. I mean, every single season he's been in the league, he's hit double digits. Marshon Lattimore's out, though. He's still nursing a hamstring injury after that big trade.
Has he played like two games for them, I believe?
Yeah, and I think this is probably like precautionary. They want to make sure he's ready to go for the wild card round. But yes, he has not been available. Tyler Biadasz is also doubtful for this game. Cornelius Lucas is doubtful for this game as well. So they're dealing with some offensive line injuries, are the Commanders. Okay, Jets today are interviewing Mike Vrabel for their head coaching job. I don't know what they're really going to do, if they're going to make that move. I don't know if Vrabel, like, if I'm Mike Vrabel, there's probably better options than the Jets for me. It seems like everybody wants you.
I think Vrabel's
I'm
just
punt on that one.
He's just trying to tick off Robert Kraft and the Patriots. Like, hey man, if you don't want me, I could be right here in your division.
I love that.
Life hell.
They had the chance to hire him last year, and then instead they didn't. They went with Gerard Mayo, his former, I don't know if they even played together there in New England, but certainly both former Patriots. Looks like Shane Steichen is unlikely to be fired by the Colts after they're missing the playoffs. But there was an Athletic article that came out yesterday.
So Bob Irsay, they've got him away from the Meds?
I don't know, because you got a player that's talking about what's going on in Indianapolis, and it's not good. Quote, there's no vision from the top down, from the front office to the coaches to the players. No one is ever on the same page, and every year at the end, we're sitting here losing. If you look at the best teams in the league, they all have a vision, and they commit to it. The Chiefs keep winning because they have a vision. The Lions turn things around because they have a vision. There's no vision here. I often wonder that about the team in Frisco. Is there a vision? Is there a plan? I think it's very reactionary.
I think FC Dallas is more about their finances than there are about the...
FC Dallas is for sure. I like where you're going there. But, man, I don't know if the Cowboys have much vision at times. But I can see that when it comes to the Colts. And then the stuff with Anthony Richardson, you brought up the back injury that he's dealing with. So he's now out. He's not going to play the season finale.
He was crawling around on all fours at his own house because he couldn't stand up because his 23-year-old back hurts so bad.
It sounds chronic. And where he ranks this year among all quarterbacks, completion percentage, passer rating, touchdown to interception rate, all last, and then EPA per dropback, which is expected points added, second to last.
Chief, you wearing that one? Is that the one you're wearing in scouting world? Richardson?
Yeah, I mean, among a handful of others.
I mean, like,
sure.
That's my Joey Harrington, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we knew the boomer bust factor. It was like, this guy, you're gonna draft him, and if he sucks, you're gonna be picking back in the top five again.
That's
he has the super alien chance to do something here that most can't in the AFC. You're living in a world with Burrow and Mahomes and Allen, and you're gonna need an alien type dude. Yeah. So, but he took off two or three weeks
ago and had a touchdown where it's just like, I could see where you would want to try to make it happen still.
Yeah, I mean, his...
I wonder if Chris Ballard's going to keep his job in Indy for this stuff.
It doesn't sound like
it,
dude.
No, I think they're going to have to clean house there. I mean, maybe you give it another year. And look, if Shane Steichen became available and you were looking for a new play caller, I'd absolutely be interested there as an offensive coordinator. What he did with the Eagles was very, very impressive, and they missed him greatly last year. You saw that at times.
He made Gardner Minshew look really dang good last year.
He absolutely did. And that's a team. I mean, I thought Anthony Richardson, that was a good pairing, but clearly Anthony Richardson, I mean, as the second he tapped out, you're in the red zone, it's a third down, I'm like, that dude's done.
Yeah.
He's done. But at that same token, you look at what Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield are doing. First pair of ex-teammates ever with 35 or more passing touchdowns for new teams in the same year. Maybe there is something in the NFL where we look at these young quarterbacks and their failures and we give up on them a little too quickly. But you know, Anthony Richardson, maybe he's a bad example of this, but there is something to be said about some of these guys that struggle early on. They find a new home somewhere else, and they're able to really revitalize their careers. Those are two great examples. I know we talked about Geno. Like, maybe he's not great in Seattle, but he certainly had a nice bounce back to his career
totally.
In Seattle, taking them to the postseason, having some really good moments. So it is. I mean, maybe we do. It's all about – it's results-oriented. It's what have you done for me lately, and we want instant gratification. But at quarterback, some of these guys, we probably do pull the trigger a little too quickly. But it's hard not to in the NFL because, like you said, You got a GM now. Is he going to get fired or not? Right? And so you make a bad pick. You don't have 5 years to wait around on a guy to come along. It's just the world we're living in.
No, I think I would rather move along after 2 years, though, than sit around and think, is this guy going to be the next Kurt Warner or Sam Darnold? You know, I think at least 80% of the dudes that don't have it by end of year two, and I'm probably still being generously low on that number.
Let's get to the Lions, Vikings, big game. Okay, this is probably the best game of the weekend. It's historic, most wins combined in a season finale between two teams ever, first 14-win wildcard team in history, the loser will be. Here was Amon-Ra St. Brown. He wants to change this rule in the postseason. Do we agree?
The rule should be changed. Obviously, if you win a division, you should obviously make a playoff spot, but having a 14-win team, having to go on the road is kind of crazy, but I guess, I don't make the rule, so hopefully we can get a win and get home field advantage, but whatever happens, we both have a spot in the playoffs, so we might see each other again after this game.
Dan Watson.
Should they move to the NBA, where you're just basically seeding based on records, or as St. Brown said, look, yeah, you should get rewarded for winning your division, but then you've got a 14-win team that's going to be the 5 seed going on the road in the first round. I do feel like we're having this conversation more often than not over the last decade here when it comes to the NFL. Like, we've had some 7-9 division winners, and we're like, should you get a home game for doing that? Do you think NFL should switch this?
I think they should just say, if you win the division, you're in, but you don't get home field advantage. You know, I think that would be an easy fix for it. I also feel like we need significant schedule redoing as far as playing every team in your conference. You know, it just seems you're at 17 games. Maybe you're going to 18 games. Let's play everybody once, you know, in our own conference and have a much better, comparison of, who you played. And maybe when you go to 18 games, you have, three against your division twice, right? But you're playing everybody in your conference still.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a way that they could tighten it up. But I mean, like, I do love the idea that right now you have the Lions and the Vikings playing in a meaningful game. If they both knew they were going to have a home field playoff game next week, they'd both just be punting on it and gearing up for the postseason. And week 18 would be borderline rendered useless. Like, that's the game.
No, I like that. I didn't think about that angle on it.
Yeah, this is going to be a fantastic one on Sunday
night. It's probably all a formula for ratings and meaningful games in the regular season as much as possible.
Okay, would you rather have In-N-Out or Five Guys? This went down on the sideline for the Chargers.
I'd rather have Five Guys, but the price dictates things. Okay, so I have In-N-Out way more often.
Your coach is going to pay for 100 burgers. Here was the exchange on the Chargers sideline on Sunday.
Five guys.
100 burgers. Cajun fries or normal fries?
Whatever you want. Yeah, surprises.
Surprises.
You trying to save money now. Yeah. We can't let him off like that. In-N-Out, he got to pay that money.
So, yes, they go with the 100 burgers from Five Guys, and today their offensive line coach paid up. He had a buffet line of 100 Five Guys burgers and the Cajun fries, and everybody on the team is just running in, grabbing their burgers. But what would you choose? I mean, I know Whataburger's not a part of this, because that would be the winner for us. It always is. But if it's just Five Guys or In-N-Out.
Five Guys.
I think I agree.
In-N-Out.
You're going In-N-Out?
Yeah.
I'm going In-N-Out as well. I just don't get the Five Guys thing. You know, I think there's a lot of criticism for the In-N-Out fry, and I get that, but I don't think the Five Guys fry is that good either. Oh. You know, you got a lot of potato peel on there.
There's something just,
Sogginess going on for sure.
But like half the bag is fries. You know, it's like.
There is something cool about their packaging. Yeah, you know, you eat with your eyes first.
Oh, yes. What do you think, Lucius? Because I know, like, we've talked about this. You like Five Guys, but I think you and I both agree the burger can be kind of small.
Yeah, I'll do Five Guys over In-N-Out for sure.
I'm with you.
Yeah, tell them toast that bun a little bit for me. Throw some bacon on there.
Ooh, toasty toast.
Yeah. I do not like the fries, though.
At Five Guys?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're punting on the fries.
I don't eat a lot of fries.
We're punting on them. Miami's in a do-or-die, must-win-or-go-home game, and it's going to be Tyler Huntley, who's going to be starting in place of Tua.
Goodness, man. Yeah, he's got a hip issue.
I mean, I think both these teams, like Cincinnati and Miami. Now, Cincinnati's going to play on Saturday, and they've got a tough one against Pittsburgh, but you're looking at what the Chiefs are doing and probably thinking Denver's going to get in and we're screwed regardless. But if you're Miami, this is heartbreaking that your season's now relying on Tyler Huntley.
You made your bed, man. You saddled up to Tua.
Hasn't it been that way the last 3 years? And it always been named backup dude.
Yeah, I mean, Skylar Thompson had to start a playoff game for
him. It seems like every time they get an opportunity, it's, hey, let's go to like a massively cold game and let's play with a backup dude. Mm. You know, that's Miami Dolphin football.
No, that's true. And then the expensiveness of these playoff, or not, it's a playoff game basically, but $485 is the current get-in price for Lions and Vikings. Second most expensive Lions game ever. I don't know what the first one was, but I'd like to find out. Maybe that NFC Championship game they played in, like in the early 90s. They played in one and they hosted one with Barry. But I don't know. Second most expensive ever.
It had to be last year's playoff game, considering inflation. I mean, in the 90s, you were probably getting in for 20 or 5.
Yeah, it was their first home playoff game.
Rams and Bucks at home. Maybe it was that Stafford 2. Yeah, that probably was at the wild card game. That's a good call there.
Well, thank you, Chuck. NFL News Today in the books most every day at 3 o'clock here on The Fan. Nick Harris, Star Telegram, answers our Cowboys questions coming up next here on The Fan. Here we go. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It is a proper football Friday. Mavs game night, though, they've dropped three in a row. And, you know, we're wondering, what can this team get done without Luke as they get set to host the Cavaliers, one of the better teams in the East? But it's time to talk Cowboys here with Nick Harris of the Star Telegram. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. And it's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car truck wreck due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. And a good afternoon, Nick. How the heck are you?
Hey, doing well, fellas. How are y'all?
Doing well. You know, I do feel like this is a must-lose game for the Cowboys, and I'm a little concerned that appears Micah Parsons is going to play.
Yeah, he will. You know, he's at 9.5 sacks. He's got to chase those double digits. But, yeah, he's chasing All-Pro nomination, too, if he can sneak in there.
How much do you get the feeling that winning is a big emphasis going into this game inside that locker room?
Yeah, I don't know how much necessarily is winning. I mean, you ask anybody in there, of course they would like to come out with a win on Sunday. But it sounds like there's a big emphasis on playing young talent, and that young talent trying to get, you know, ample opportunity to show what they got. You know, there's going to be a point in this offseason where, you know, these decision makers look up, they look around, and they're trying to make decisions on personnel, and they go, man, I really wish we could play a game right now. Well, this is their opportunity to do that, and I think they're going to try to make the most of it.
The Zeke stuff, I'm curious because you had your article. How surprised were you in regards to him being released? And was this something that Zeke and his agent were actually thinking, that a playoff team was going to scoop him up?
Yeah, I was saying maybe USL playoff team, but yeah, it was interesting. It doesn't necessarily surprise me. I mean, yeah, the timing was weird, but it doesn't necessarily surprise me that he wanted to go ahead and find a contender. You know, it makes sense on paper. He was not getting a ton of action. He wasn't getting a lot of snaps. He only had 3 snaps in that win against Tampa Bay. And, you know, it wasn't like his usage since that incident ahead of the Atlanta game had really inspired confidence for anybody. So it made sense. And this was a conclusion that I think everybody understood was coming. You know, they were not going to bring him back in 2025. And so it made sense for both parties to allow this to happen.
Even his jokes weren't landing anymore, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, do you know the contents of that particular joke, Nick?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on that part in the story. It involves, you know, personal things with other players that I didn't feel like getting involved with, but it was something that was not well received by a couple of players in that locker room after that win in Carolina. And you know, I think that was a good microcosm of the support in the locker room that he had lost going up to that point, and then certainly thereafter. I mean, you look at a guy like Dak Prescott, who was, you know, his friend coming into the league, was excited he came back. You know, whenever he left and went on IR, there weren't a lot of guys around in that locker room that had a great relationship with Zeke the first time around. And, you know, as time went on and he started phasing himself out of meetings and wasn't as active at practice, he spent a lot of time in rehab on his own. It just always felt like Zeke was on his own in 2024. And I think that was a good example of that even in like an upbeat moment after a win in Carolina, he's trying to make a joke and it doesn't quite land well. And I think it was just a good microcosm of the emotions around Zeke Elliott and the feelings around Zeke Elliott at that point.
I think that particular nugget and all the insights that you've brought on this particular story, Nick, are what set you apart, my friend. That is fantastic work on your reporting right there. Thank you for it. I find it extremely interesting. You did the legwork. You figured it out. Nobody else has it. You're a badass and we love you.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Well done, Nick. Nick Harris joining us, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Make sure you read all those articles that Nick Harris is putting out there on the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
You always get my click, Nick.
Okay, when it comes to the locker room, though, everyone's kind of said the right thing publicly about Mike McCarthy, including the quarterback. Do you think that that's accurate in how they feel? Is there really a groundswell of support for Mike to come back next year?
You know, there's no way to know what's being said behind closed doors, whether it be from the quarterback or the star defensive player or whoever else that supports Mike McCarthy. I think, they do make the right comments about Mike, because I think there's a certain way you could go about it if you did not want Mike McCarthy to be back as a player. You could be like, you know what, yeah, he's had 3, 12, and 5 seasons. You just talk factually, and you'd be like, yeah, and you know, the offense looked good when Dak was here. But some of these guys are like, hey, like we want to win for him. He's good for us. He's a player's coach. He allows us to do our job when we speak up about it. He works with us. So I think there's a lot of things being said about Mike that really do feel genuine. But I truly do feel like at the end of the day, we do not know 100% what will be said behind closed doors. I'm not 100% sure that the opinion of certain players on the team will be valued behind closed doors, just because I think this is a big organizational decision that starts with two people up top, and that's Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. I feel like they will make the decision based on what they have, based on what they know, and everybody will have to adapt to that.
Hey, Nick, you guys had a chance to visit with Mike Zimmer, though, and I was just curious – of where you're at with his his potential decision here. Do you feel like that he wants to come back, or is this something that that he's tired and just he was doing Jerry and Steven a favor and now is ready to move on?
I don't think it was necessarily as much of a Jerry and Steven favor as much as it was a favor for Mike Zimmer and an opportunity for both of them to kind of find each other in those moments, because Mike Zimmer, he said in his very opening press conference, I need the game of football back in my life. He had been dealing with tragedy the last couple of years, and he needed this game back for his son, Adam. And speaking in his final press conference of the season this past Monday, to me, it felt like him walking off. It felt like the final time we would see Mike Zimmer, just with the way he was speaking whenever he found out mid-press conference that it would be his last press conference. And he spoke a little bit more holistically and a little bit more looking back than he did before he found that little nugget out. I think the decision ultimately falls on Mike Zimmer first, and if he wants to be back, then the decision falls on Jerry and Stephen Jones. If they do not go out, let's say that they move on from McCarthy, if they do not go out and get a defensive-minded head coach, then I would be surprised if Mike Zimmer is not the choice to be back if he wants to be back. I think that's the biggest caveat in this whole ordeal, though.
Nick, what was it that he didn't do early in the season that he wishes that he would have done?
Yeah, so he broke that down a little bit in saying that he was like, look, this is a defense over the course of the last 3 years was, really productive. It took the ball away. It was good in pass defense. It was good rushing the passer. He didn't want to tinker too much with what was already in place. And you think about all the times that he has stepped into a position, whether it be as defensive coordinator or as head coach in Minnesota, he's kind of had to rehaul a group. This is kind of his first time taking over a group that was already good. They did the job with this defense and coaching it. And so in the beginning, he said he mixed in his philosophy. He mixed in his thinking, whereas he should have just come in and done a clean slate. And he calls that the biggest regret that he had from this past season, is not being, quote, a little bit more hard-headed early on, whether that be in training camp or in the early weeks of the season. Because I think we can all say, anybody who's watched any of the games, any of the fans listening on here on The Fan, anybody could say that early in the season compared to late in the season, this Mike Zimmer defense looks completely different. And when you factor in what Mike Zimmer had to say on Monday about, yeah, I did some things early on that I wouldn't necessarily do again, it makes a lot of sense, because it felt like whenever Mike Zimmer started to use those double mug linebacker looks a lot, whenever they started to attack pressure with from the secondary with guys like Donovan Wilson, Jordan Lewis, granted, the corner situation has been all over the place, but even the corner looks have been a little bit different. We saw Deron Bland travel with A.J. Brown last week. That's something we haven't seen. And I think whenever he started getting a little bit more comfortable and calling what he has gotten used to calling over the course of his career, we started to see that defense improve.
Nick Harris, Star Telegram, with you on The Fan. Who are the young players that are going to get an opportunity that you'd love to see, flash a little bit on Sunday?
Yeah, I would love to see Austin Richards on the offensive line. I think that's an interesting piece that they can work with moving forward, not only at the tackle position, but I think he's got some guard flexibility as well. I would like to see what he could provide potentially to that offensive front. I'd like to see Marshawn Nealand in a situational pass rush role just to see what he can do in getting after the quarterback. You know, since his return from that knee issue, he's been playing on a lot of rundowns, but I'd like to see him get some pass rush opportunities. I mean, the linebacking core and the cornerback position, that's just a situation of playing guys that are healthy right now. So I feel like we will be able to see guys at the safety position. I'd like to see Wanye Thomas get some love. I would like to see what he could do getting worked into the mix. I've stood on the table before and saying that I think he could be a pretty damn good safety in this league given the opportunity. And then on the other side of the ball, again, receiver, it's just kind of playing whoever's available to you. I mentioned on the break on Cowboys.com this morning that I would like to see Jalen Cropper elevated this week just to see what he could provide, just because he was so good in training camp. He was so good in the preseason. You know, throw a couple targets his way, see what he can do. But I think there's potential at almost all positions. You can look at Deuce Vaughn at running back. Hey, go ahead and make him active this week since Zeke is out of the equation. There's some options there.
When it comes to Trey Lance, I think they've been very outspoken about Cooper Rush is starting, and then today Jerry didn't want to comment for competitive reasons. Do you think that's an indication we're going to see some Trey Lance? Because I know you had the Cooper Rush snaps and how close he is to getting that bonus.
Yeah, so if Cooper Rush plays 65 out of 65 snaps on Sunday, which that's the amount of offensive snaps that they have averaged since Cooper Rush has taken over as starting quarterback, then he will barely hit the $500,000 incentive in his contract that says that if he plays the 55% amount of snaps, then he gets that money. So I that has to be factored in, I would assume. But if he kept payment a little bit short, I'm sure there is still a way the team and the organization, it's been done before in the league, around the league, where if those incentives come just a hair short, that they'll still be able to be paid out. But I expect to see some Trey Lance in this game just with how hushed they've been this week about it. You know, I don't feel like there would be any other reason to be hush unless Trey Lance was getting factored in, whether it just be red zone packages or third down situations, whatever, or running down situations. I think we'll see some Trey Lance, but I think it's still going to be majority Cooper Rush.
Nick Harris, Star Telegram, thank you so much for your work this season. Enjoy your football weekend, sir. Salute to you.
Right, thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys.
Cheers. The Rangers Winter Caravan Tour presented by Coca-Cola kicks off next Thursday in our fan showroom downstairs here at 75 and Fitzhugh. It's free. Just get here early. Marcus Semien will be signing autographs starting at 6:30, and Sands has your Rangers hot stove debut from 7 to 8. Massive night for Tolos. That's next Thursday, and the autographs will start at 6:30. Krusty's Corner's coming up next. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, we need to take a look at this Commanders defense. We'll do it one final time next.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. Okay, and thanks to Reliant Air Conditioning for sponsoring Krusty's Corner. Gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. That's what you get over there with those guys at Reliant. And let's get some Krusty's Corner. Here's Broadus.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. As you mentioned, thank you very much to Reliant for being a part of this one. This final time we'll rally for a report on a Cowboy opponent, unfortunately. But here we are. The thing with the Commanders is that when you watched their defense, and this is what was really amazing to me. I went back and I was watching the game against the Cowboys, and this was one of the better games when you start to talk about with the Cowboys offensive line. And they only allowed the Cowboys offensive line against this group only allowed 6 pressures on 32 drop back passes. And, you know, it was pretty clear that they had a pretty good handle on Fowler, Armstrong. They got hurt a little bit with Frankie Luva and then, you know, with their linebacking core and how they are able to run and create pressure. But this was a good day for the Cowboys, I felt like, offensively. If you go back and look at it, though, because I was curious, I'm like, man, the Commanders just not getting any pressure. There's the last couple of games I've watched where they didn't get much pressure on Atlanta either this last game. And those two games were for the Commanders when it came to the lowest number of pressures that they had this season. They allowed 6 pressures against the Cowboys, or the Cowboys allowed 6 pressures against them, and so did the Falcons. So that was the lowest that they've had this season.
I'm wondering if Penix is one of those get the ball out super quick kind of guys.
It did look that way.
He was trying. Like, he was not holding the football. And this was a game, too, where if you go back and watch Cooper Rush play, he was well under the 2-5 threshold in a lot of teams. This was one of the quicker games that he had. But this was also, in this last game, this was against the Commanders. For Rush, it was the second most completed passes he's had, or the Commanders have given up this season. So his work in that game was pretty impressive with his accuracy and then, you know, getting the ball to where it needed to be and his receivers doing a good job. But, yeah, they gave up 24, the Commanders gave up 24 completions, you know, against the Cowboys then. And we talk about the offensive line and this stuff. The Cowboys in that game also averaged 7.9 yards a play.
Whew.
And that was
that might be the most all year.
Yeah. That was the fifth most, though, that the Commanders have given up this season. So they've had some issues, but 7.9, the Cowboys, that's pretty damn good for them,
yeah,
for
really
what
good.
We've seen. And what's also funny is too is that the Commanders, they only blitzed Rush 9 times in this game. And that was the fifth fewest blitzes they'd had this season. So do you feel like that maybe that they'll come after Rush in this game?
Yes. I think so. Now, I know we were worried about their ability to just get home without the pressure. And maybe
they're a four-man rush.
Yeah, because we were thinking like, okay, Fowler and Armstrong, like these former Cowboys, they're going to be licking their chops. They're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder. And the Cowboys did a really good job outside. It might have been the first or second series. Mm-hmm. I think Dorrance blew up one of those runs. Like it might have been a jet sweep or something like that. But otherwise, like Fowler was non-existent in that game. Yeah. So I think absolutely, if they look at the tape like you did, which I know they did, they're going to want to go ahead and definitely pressure a little bit more.
Yeah, I can't imagine coming into a game against Cooper Rush and having our plan be to not do whatever it takes to pressure him.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if they don't blitz Rush, and because he's had his share of problems against some man coverage stuff and some blitzes all year.
Dan Quinn can come up with some like counterintuitive type of game plans, as we saw last year in the playoffs. That can
he might not want to show very much either, though, going into the next game, whoever they play. You know, he might
That's
not want to. You know, he might want to hold some of those blitzes back. I know he's trying to win the game. I was curious, too, is because the Cowboys, the way the route running was in this football game, they took advantage of this Commander secondary. I went back and looked at something. I said that because the metrics showed it. 63% of the Cowboys' routes were open. This has been the highest percentage that the Commanders have allowed all year long. So 63%, you know, we have tight window, and then you have open and then wide open. Another 25% of the Cowboys' routes were considered wide open in this game.
I think that gets shut down without Lamb, doesn't it?
I'd be interested because they took advantage. They took advantage of the linebackers in this game.
Didn't the tight ends have big, like it was Nick Ferguson,
Chin,
Scooney, and
Jeremy Chin had a
yeah, like not Span a, Ford had a couple catches.
Yeah, Jeremy Chin, the safety, had some. I think he gave up 3 plays for 61 yards and a touchdown. So they play a lot of single high look, and that Chin got exposed for some of the plays, some of the pass plays.
Never expose your chin.
Never expose your chin. No. That's a bad idea.
No.
But it's funny because, again, the metrics showed this too when you're watching the tape. Cowboys averaged almost 4 yards of separation, of target separation. So the third most the Commanders allowed. The Cowboys were, when you look at how the game on tape played, and then the metrics of it was even more of an ass kick. And then, you know, the score, I mean, unfortunately, they gave up the plays at the end on defense, stuff like that. But the Cowboys did have some success throwing the football against these guys. Separation, guys open, pass protection. You know, I don't know. Can they rally and do this again?
I think so. I think that's something we learned against Tampa Bay as well. Like, if your pass defense is bad, but you're stout against the run, I thought it would slit the Cowboys' offense's throat with Cooper Rush, but he was able to exploit both those teams.
Yeah.
But, man, without Lamb, that challenge becomes great. Now, the Eagles' defense, like what you saw last week, of course, is a multiple levels up from what the Commanders got running out there for sure.
Right.
But, man, without Lamb, it felt like nothing could get going. Pretty good chance, though.
I just don't know if you're going to have to score a ton of points. You know, you get a defensive play, a special teams play.
Well, that's
and if
how Micah, they won the game.
If Micah Parsons plays the whole game, you know, then I could see him being disruptive enough to really slow down the Washington offense and present this scenario where the Cowboys move themselves right out of the top half of the first round. The ultimate nightmare.
Washington might be playing with a backup center. I mean, Biotis is doubtful.
Yeah. He's
that's what they might want to pick up Zeke for, actually.
Well, that's what that's <There you go. laughs> But see, that's what we were talking about too, because where did Micah have some advantage? You know, they Nick Allegretti and those guys and Biotis playing him as that three technique.
Yeah.
Played him inside and it was one on one and they couldn't block him is what they couldn't do. Now, I'll say this though, in the last time that these two teams met, we mentioned about the offensive line and I was looking at something because of the defensive tackles, because the Commanders are really, really big on four-man rush. That's Dan Quinn did that when he was here, that four-man rush. I mean, they're 73%. That's third most in the league when it comes to three-man rush. So, but the Cowboys gave up no sacks against a four-man rush in this last game. So, but Payne, the defensive tackle for them, this you could tell on tape. He was the player that was doubled the most in this game. 8 of the 21 pass rushes he had, they let everybody else single. I mean, even Armstrong, Fowler, they let everybody play one on one. Who they were worried about in that last game was Payne, and you know, but eight of his 21 pass rushes he was doubled. So that's kind of and neither you know on that whole note. You know, Fowler and Armstrong neither had a sack in the game. I mean, so that's the big thing right there. You're going to have to deal with Wagner, and I mentioned Luvo in the run game. Both those.
Is Allen playing? Is Jonathan Allen back?
Jonathan Allen
played
back
last week, right?
Yeah, he's back. He's back. Their
that's
tackle
a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's a pain. Their tackles are really, really good. That's. But I do worry. I do worry about Payne. Because he is a big dude, and he had some moments where it was pretty close to them having some problems, even doubling him. But Wagner and Luvu as the linebackers, if Dallas is going to try and run the ball, these guys are going to make those are going to be your primary guys to make tackles. Both of them had five just run tackles in that game, and you got guys that had tackles for losses. That's where Frankie Luvu is a big player. Is this a game where you kind of look at Jonathan Mingo and you go ahead and just try and load it up and see what he's got?
Yeah.
Just go ahead and just
please
say,
yeah,
you know, like last week when they targeted Cooks, you know, we were saying, God, they're throwing the ball to Cooks too much. Is this a game where you just load up? If the Commanders are going to play 7 yards cushion, which they do, you know, they're going to play off you. And this week, you just go and just say, you know, let's take the big body guy and see if we could get like 8 targets to him in the first half.
Especially if you want to start off with a slant like they did with Cooks. Like, I'd much rather that ball be going to Jonathan Mingo and that big bod.
You know, as a guy that desperately wants to see the Cowboys lose, I love that idea. Let's go 15, 16 targets. I'm sure he'll catch 3 or 4 of them.
Okay.
And the game will go along just as planned.
Yeah. I just, there's certain things that you like, okay. Give me an idea of a player, and I know I'm with you on the loss stuff. I get it. I don't want to be picking 15th or 17th or something like that. But give me a player that needs to have the type of game going into next year to kind of that guy needs to be, you know, have some positive momentum. And don't worry about the wins or loss, but just a guy that needs to have some positive momentum going. I think Guyton was my
Guyton,
guy.
100%.
Oh, yeah,
Guyton was my
nice
guy.
He
yeah
would have I mean, to just, be at the top.
Just to have some positive, but I'll let you guys pick a guy if you'd like.
You know, I was going to go with Mozzie Smith, continuing with that trend of him performing against the division. Could we have his best game of the year?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah,
you, Chief?
That was the name that I was thinking of as well. And Mozzie has struggled over these last couple of weeks versus better competition, Bucks and Eagles. So you'd like to see him end the season on a good note. And this is the type of team, especially if Biotis is going to be out, that you should find success in.
I'd like to see the 2023 version of Jake Ferguson. I'd like to see him go out on a high. I mean, I think that all the young guys we can point to, but Jake Ferguson might be the most disappointing player this year for me. I really thought he was going to take that next step.
Oh, we all did.
And it just hasn't been there. So I'd love to see more of that yak, you know, get a big play, especially like if we're talking about Spanford and Schoonmaker, we're having success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ferguson really doesn't have an excuse here. I need Fergie to show out on Sunday.
Yeah, I just feel like the Guyton needs some type of momentum.
I'm with you.
That somebody can say, hey, listen, it ended well, but man, you've got to be a better pro. You got to work at this. You got to do this, you know, kind of maybe play well, but also be able to say, okay, if you want to continue to ride the bench, well, here's what, just keep doing what you're doing. But if you want to be a starter, this is what you have to do in the NFL. I think he needs one of those games.
And that he would get that, you think, from playing well, the confidence?
I think confidence. I think just going into the offseason, he goes out there and flops around and doesn't play, and maybe plays a series or two, gives up a bunch of pressures or a sack. That's not going to do any. That's
a guy that needs to be playing every snap of the game.
I agree.
Like, we don't need to see a single second of Chuma Adoga, man.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, all that experience, all those moments. I mean, if you're getting whooped, you know, oftentimes that can be the fuel for your work in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you don't play, you're walking off the field blaming the coaches. But if you go out there and get crushed, I mean, instantly, you got to become a lunch pail guy to make it a career and not be a first-round bust. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning. Basketball up next, Chief.
Yeah, let's crank open a rim sesh. We got your Mavs preview for tonight's game versus the Cavs. Charles Barkley ripping J.J. Redick, and trouble in South Beach next in the nation.